About every 20 years, new technology comes along that revolutionizes the sound of recorded music, or the economics of the record industry, or both. In the past, those technologies have primarily affected recording studios and record pressing plants, but the latest revolution is happening at home. In the sixth installment of Technopop, The Secret History of Technology and Popular Music, NPR's Rick Carr examines new technology that, according to some observers, will mean the end of the music industry as we know it.
Elizabeth Sharp lives in a recording studio. It's underneath her bedroom in her loft apartment in a former warehouse in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn.
So this is the recording space that's dubbed the Rock Closet, because as you can see, it's pretty small. It's 6x3 or so.
Actually, it's more like 6x8, with a drum kit crammed into one corner opposite a stack of guitar amps. The walls are soundproofed with cardboard and old futons.
That allows me to be able to record at 3 in the morning or whenever I want, without having to worry about bothering other people.
Just 10 years ago, even a studio like this would have cost $50,000 or more. Today, it can be had for the cost of a home computer and less than $1,000 of additional hardware and software. Sharp double-clicks the mouse on the Apple Macintosh that serves as the studio's recorder, and the tracks for a song on the most recent CD by her band Ill Ease appear on screen.
It's got 3 drum tracks, so I recorded those and then did some editing that I wanted to do to stretch out some measures, get rid of some measures. You can see the other tracks, like the bass, rhythm guitar, noisy guitar.
Thousands of musicians like Elizabeth Sharp around the world are taking advantage of the cheap, powerful technology. Chicago recording engineer Steve Albini, who's produced albums by Nirvana, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, and hundreds of less well-known rock bands, has a name for what's happening.
I like to refer to that as the triumph of the amateurs.
Albini says the triumph began around 1980, when Japanese manufacturers started building 4-track recording studios in a box that used cassette tapes. For around $2,000, they allowed musicians to record pretty good-sounding demos of their songs at home. In 1982, Bruce Springsteen used one to record his album, Nebraska.
Well, they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house, too. Down on the boardwalk, they're getting ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do.
By the late 1980s, the price of portable cassette studios had fallen to as little as $200. It seemed that just about every serious musician had one. Steve Albini says the technology demystified the process of making records.
As these less expensive, sort of semi-professional tape machines became available, every band got the experience of recording in some fashion, and every band developed its own working method. And I think that that enabled the enormous growth of semi-professional bands in the 80s, where it seems like everybody you knew was in a band. From a cultural standpoint, I think that was a great and important development. It certainly made possible everything that I've done in my career.
Pretty soon, scores of bands were releasing records they'd recorded themselves on the cheap machines. The movement came to be known as lo-fi.
I am a scientist, I seek to understand me, all of my impurities and evils yet unknown. I am a journalist, I write to you to show you, I am an incurable and nothing else behaves like me.
Members of such bands as Guided by Voices compared what they did to punk rock. Punk's message was anybody can be in a band. The new technology said anyone can be a studio visionary. At the same time, desktop computers were accelerating the revolution. Professional studios had been recording sound digitally since the 1970s. Those systems cost tens of thousands of dollars, but they were much more flexible than traditional tape recorders. Dave LeBolt works for DigiDesign, the San Francisco area company that created the software package Pro Tools.
It's sort of like a word processor for sound. You see a waveform representation of the sound on the screen, the little squiggly line that represents what the sound is, and you can cut, copy, or paste it to a different location.
The cost of the software has fallen dramatically. Today, DigiDesign even offers a free version of Pro Tools. Dave LeBolt says that's helped empower people who aren't musicians in a traditional sense.
People who might not have motor skills, they might not have practiced like I did for many years to be able to play well, that's not really very important. They might have a vision that they have musically, and they're able to realize it by using found stuff on vinyl, using samples.
In other words, the software is perfect for hip-hop and dance music built from short bits of other recordings.
So you know as well as I do that things are changing.
The accessibility of the technology is redefining the economics of the record industry. Miles Copeland managed The Police and today runs the independent Los Angeles label Arc 21. He says labels traditionally advanced thousands of dollars to musicians who showed promise so they could go into studios to record. Now, he doesn't have to.
I've had a lot of music brought into me, offered to me for free or next to free, that's super quality, and I say, you know what, I'm willing to take a shot on this because I'm not being roasted into spending fortunes in a studio, and I can hear the thing finished. I can listen and say, wow, this is what I'm paying for.
But technology is a double-edged sword, Copeland says. The home computers that empower musicians allow fans, in his words, to steal music by using the peer-to-peer file-sharing services that sprang up on the internet in the wake of Napster. Some musicians, on the other hand, like those services because they offer a way of reaching millions of fans without the help of Miles Copeland or anyone else at a record label. Inventor and former session guitarist Roger Lynn is playing his newest gadget, a box that takes the sound of an electric guitar and essentially turns it into a whole band.
That's what I was playing, this right here. Everything else was done by the box.
He wrote Eric Clapton's 1978 hit Promises and invented the first fully programmable drum machine. Lynn says technology gave birth to the music industry. Now it's destroying it.
Electronics at the beginning of the 20th century enabled one person to sing in one place and have it reach many people and created this industry of people to be the gatekeepers and charge money and make money in it. But now the record companies don't really have the rule of distribution so much anymore, or at least conceivably in the future, because of the internet. I don't think they know what's going on.
Lynn says it comes down to simple economics. Demand remains constant while the supply of music increases, so the price falls. There'll be fewer professional musicians, he says, but more people making music. The triumph of the amateurs will be complete.
I think before the era of broadcast, the 20th century, music was more of something that you did for your enjoyment. Maybe you were a carpenter, you did something else, but you would play music also. That's something you did for your enjoyment and for the enjoyment of your friends. And I think today maybe too many people think of it as a career. When you think about popular music today is really just another name for what used to be called folk music, the music of the folks, the music of the people.
Roger Lynn admits that the world he envisions isn't here yet. Record labels aren't about to simply close up shop. They're successfully battling the peer-to-peer file trading services in court, for instance. And Lynn says we've yet to see the emergence of a superstar whose music was born in a bedroom and distributed for free over the internet. But he says it's only a matter of time. Rick Carr, NPR News.